it is time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robin Hood Radio. Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch. What are you doing, Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch?
I'm thinking a lot about Passover, which Saturday night, the first Seder.
Right.
I used to dread, got to say, when I was a boy and my grandfather led the Seder and we had to literally say every word that was in the Haggadah. Saturday, starting a Seder on Saturday, which I dreaded because there were all these extra prayers you had to say, making the Seder even longer. Now, if you've never been to an, let's say, Orthodox Seder, you wouldn't be aware that we don't really get to eat.
There's no food.
For at least an hour or two into the thing, into the ritual.
I'm hungry.
Pardon me?
No, it's just, that's it. There's no food.
There's no food, at least for an hour and a half.
Yes.
Depends on who's leading the Seder. I was one of five grandchildren. I was the eldest of five grandchildren. And so at my grandfather's Seder, at some early point, we all had to say the four questions, which really made it long. Anyway, the four questions, why is this night different than every other night, it starts at the beginning of the Seder. In any case, it was, of course, the food that I most looked forward to. But in our family, nobody could wait until 9 o'clock. Or, by the way, you don't start the Seder until sundown. Sundown is now 7-something, I believe.
Yeah, and the later...
Like 7:30 by Saturday. And so you didn't really get to eat until 9 o'clock at the earliest. An aside for the moment, I have a video of a movie that Bob and I saw many years ago that we watch every Passover now, and it's called When Do We Eat? And you can, I'm sure you can find it somewhere these days. Everything is streamed. We saw it actually in the movies, in a movie theater. And the two women who were sitting behind me, as soon as the movie was over, said she had to get a video of this to send to her daughter in Florida. Anyway, it's about a family, a very tight family, except that one of the sons is a... who lost his fortune in the stock market, has become ultra-religious, and another one seems to be autistic, but really is not. And there's drugs in this, and anyway, of course, the chance is, when do we eat? So when do we eat? It wasn't my family. We didn't eat until, you know, I just said, until late. But my grandmother, everybody would assemble, you know, late afternoon, early evening. And I don't know about my cousins, but my sister and I were totally ready for a snack. And my grandmother made matzah meal pancakes before, in the late afternoon, so that the children, also the adults, would have something to eat, and they wouldn't have to be starving at 9 o'clock, 9:30, when we actually got to eat. My father, who didn't close his business until 7 o'clock, but that was okay because he was only 10 minutes away from the house. So he could get to home in time for the Seder to begin. He would even shower and change before he sat down at the table. And my father, who didn't close until 7 o'clock, was brought matzah meal pancakes. The first batch of pancakes out of the pan would get wrapped up, and my grandfather would drive over. My grandfather, who finished work early on Passover, my grandfather would drive over and bring my father his snack. So I do make matzo meal pancakes during Passover, but truth be told, I even make matzo meal pancakes occasionally when it's not Passover because I like them so much. And I don't know. I wanted to say, does anybody really need a recipe for matzo meal pancakes, but probably the answer is yes. So, another aside. Right now, every supermarket, whether it has much of a Jewish following or not, is going to be carrying matzah and some products from Passover, including matzah meal, which is ground up matzah, which we use for a lot of different things. There's another granulation of matzah called matzah cake meal. And right now, you should still be able to find a box or two here or there. And if you see it, get it. Because some of the things I make, the baked goods, call for a finer granulation than plain old matzah meal, which I love, which, by the way, makes a very, very good breading if you're making, like, you know, fried chicken cutlets. In matzah meal, delicious. So if you see a box of cake meal, if not and you want to make a recipe that calls for cake meal, just whiz your regular matzah meal in the food processor to make it a finer, you know, powdery, floury granulation. So, but for plain old matzah meal pancakes, or latkes if you want to call them, I use 3 eggs. It's easy to remember because there are a lot of threes. 3 eggs, 3/4 cup of water, 1 teaspoon of salt. You beat that all together, and then you beat in. And when I say beat in, use a whisk. You can even do it with a spoon. A half a cup to 1/3 cup of matzah meal. Now, if you want to make them sweet, add a little sugar, up to 2 tablespoons. But I really like them without the sugar because, in the end, I want to sprinkle them with salt. I'm a salt guy, not a sugar guy. But certainly you can have sugar in them. And then you serve them either with applesauce or with sour cream. I fry, this time of the year, I buy myself a nice big bottle of grapeseed oil, which I really like and which is... because it's kosher for Passover, you somehow see more grapeseed oil around this time of year than you do other times, and then it's usually at a nice price, because grapeseed oil is expensive. Anyway, I fry them in about 1/4 inch of oil, hot oil, and you spoon them in. I use a big serving spoon, big kitchen spoon, you'd say, not serving spoon, but, you know, a kitchen spoon, big spoon. And you fry them on both sides until they're nice and brown and crisp, and I leave it to you. Other thing, I have to say, this is, you know, I wrote a Jewish cookbook called Arthur Schwartz's Jewish Home Cooking, and I call this Yiddish food, Yiddish recipes, because these are the recipes of Eastern Europe, of the Ashkenazi Jews. These days... meaning the last 50 years, the food of the Sephardic people, who are originally from Spain and Portugal, but then diasporaed, dispersed around the Mediterranean, so they could be North African. You could have a lot of ethnicities, but their rituals are different, and their food is different than the people who were cooking in Poland and Hungary. Obviously, the climate in Poland and Hungary produces different foods than the climate of the Mediterranean. So a lot of these foods, you know, we used to just say Jewish food, but it's not just Jewish food. It's Eastern European Jewish food, or I should say Western world Jewish food. And it depends on a lot of poor people stuff, potatoes, largely potatoes. I went to Lithuania in the 1980s and discovered the many ways you could use a potato. It was based in those days when it was hard to get any serious protein food in what was then the Soviet Union. Potatoes were a mainstay, an absolute mainstay. So anyway, the one of my favorite recipes in life, not just for Passover, and when I was thinking this morning about what recipes in Jewish home cooking worth sharing, this is one of my favorite things in life, potato kugel. Now, you can't make a noodle kugel for Passover because noodles are forbidden, at least in Ashkenazi world they are. Noodles are made with flour. No, no, no. So we revert to potatoes a lot. And potato kugel is, in my recipe, modeled after a version that I had in a Polish restaurant many, many years ago. Has a lot of eggs. So to start, you need 3 pounds of russet potatoes. Those are what we also call baking potatoes. Let me get my actual, I don't want to make any mistakes here, so I'm calling up my actual recipe. So I know how many potatoes, and I know what I do with them. To prepare the potatoes, I want you to peel them and chunk them up and put them in a bowl of cold water. Now, I have done this as prepping this the day before. Don't do it. You got to do it no more than a few hours in the cold water. Otherwise, the potatoes change totally. So that's the potatoes. You're going to peel and chunk them up and get them ready for a food processor. The whole thing is done in a food processor. It's not nearly as much trouble as you think. So beat in a large bowl, even a very large bowl, because this makes a large pudding. It fills very well a 13 by 9 inch pan, the standard baking pan. You want to beat together a dozen eggs. Now, you can reduce this to 10 eggs. I have done this. And in my cookbook, it's 12 eggs, but I have, in fact, done it with just 10. I don't go below 10 because I want this certain texture the eggs give. So beat the eggs together until they're very well mixed. And meantime, fit out your food processor. Well, not meantime, but also fit out your food processor with the regular metal blade. And you're going to use two medium onions, 12 ounces of onions, for this recipe. So peel them and chunk them up and put the chunked up onion in your food processor and using an on and off pulsing, chop them very finely, but do not liquefy them. But you do want them very finely chopped. Scrape the onions into the bowl with the eggs and stir them in, and then stir in your matzo meal. Now this calls for regular old matzo meal, 2/3 cup of regular old matzo meal. You're going to need a lot of salt, a tablespoon of salt, but you know this is a pretty bland thing otherwise. And mix that all together. And now drain the potatoes, and in the same processor bowl, you do not have to clean it, in 3 batches, process the potatoes until they're very finely chopped. Pieces should be no bigger than a grain of rice. Some will be smaller, but more or less a grain of rice. It's as if you grated them on the coarse side of the, the medium side of a four-sided grater. But anyway, a lot easier to do in a food processor. So when you get as the potatoes are done, put them in a strainer at each batch over a bowl to catch what you're going to press out. And you're going to press them with a rubber spatula until they express a lot of their moisture, and put the strained potatoes into the bowl with the egg and the onion, and discard the liquid that you pressed out. And by the way, if you want to make your own potato starch, after you've done the 3 pounds of potatoes like this, you will have settled at the bottom of that bowl quite a lot of potato starch. Anyway, I'm only joking. You don't want to do that. Unless you just want to have fun. Season the batter again with salt and pepper. And then this is how you prepare your pan. You take your 13 by 9 inch and you put a couple of tablespoons of vegetable oil, or if you happen to have schmaltz. I mostly happen to have schmaltz because as I've said before, I skim it off the top of the chicken soup that I make, and I always keep around some chicken broth. So you want to put in 2 tablespoons of that and stick it in a 350-degree oven to heat up for 5 minutes. When it comes out of the oven, of course, be careful with potholders, pour your potato batter into the pan, and what's going to happen is the oil is going to come up the sides, especially in the corners of the pan, and I want you to press down with the back of a spoon the corners so they fill in with potato, and any excess oil actually comes up over the top of the pudding. In fact, I usually take a tablespoon of oil and drizzle it, or schmaltz, and drizzle it over the top of the pudding. It adds for extra browning. This goes in a 350-degree oven for at least an hour and 15 minutes. It takes a long time. And it's almost like a giant potato frittata, if you want to put it in Italian terms. Do not serve this right out of the oven. Let it sit for at least 10, 15 minutes before you cut it up. It reheats beautifully, I have to say, so it's actually worth making a big slab of this, like as I do, because you can keep it in the fridge for a number of days, or you can even freeze it. I suggest you have it at room temperature when you stick it in the 350-degree oven again, uncovered, and this way the top and the sides will get even crunchier than they already are, which is, to me, a blessing. So that's potato kugel. Kugel is a word we use for pudding, so you could say potato pudding. I like the word kugel, one of those K words, which actually derive from some Middle German word for lump. That's a little bit of trivia, isn't it? Anyway, did you have extensive seders when you were a girl?
Some were, and then finally my father... there was a period where my father was just like, yeah, no.
Oh, well. So my father used to complain that he watched the movie. Like, why did he have to sit through the story?
Just because. Once he left Buffalo, he became, shall we say, very reformed. And then in later years, when my sister was young, they started doing long seders again.
Well, I'm over long seders. Although I would say if I was invited to one, would they?
The longest seder I have to say, the longest seder I ever went to was because someone was trying to show off because somebody else's father was a rabbi.
Oh wow!
And at the end of it,
right away, I wouldn't even have gone. Knowing what was probably to come. Anyway, I must say, we used to do a Seder, my nephew and his family and Bob and me, but we haven't in the last couple of years because the kids now, you know, have their own friends and they get invited to Seders. So, anyway, whatever, life moves on. But this is interesting. I have a recipe in this book. I'm sure it's in this book, for an apple cake for Passover, which not only has an interesting story, but turns out to be one of the most popular. I've only found this out recently from my niece. It's become an extremely popular recipe. It came to me from a listener who actually brought me the cake as a gift. At some personal appearance, and I didn't really like this cake at all when I first got it, but it was so popular in my office and with the people who were around me that I decided I had to get the recipe for their sake. So I called this woman up. She gave me the recipe and I made it, and it was, as I thought, not to my liking, really. It was too gluey, the cake itself. And but then after thinking about it, I realized what this woman had done was has turned a perfectly good Passover recipe into a not very good everyday recipe. And when I turned it back into a Passover recipe, I liked it. And according to my niece and some other people around me, they all make it every year for the last I don't know how many years. And my niece's version of it has become so popular that she's asked to bring it with her to various events, even when it's not Passover. So this is this recipe that does require Passover matzah cake meal. But you can make it with regular, as I said, with regular matzah meal. Just whirl the matzah meal in the food processor, or maybe blender would do the same job, and make it finer. So this is one of those cakes that has a topping. You can't do crumb topping on Passover because you can't use flour. I guess you could make crumbs with matzah cake meal. But this one calls for a nut topping. And it's a half a cup of coarsely chopped walnuts or pecans, if you happen to have them, 3/4 of a cup of sugar, and a tablespoon, sounds like a lot, but in the end it's not, a tablespoon of cinnamon. Now, some time ago, years ago, I wanted to make this cake and I was out of cinnamon. I only had a teaspoon of cinnamon, not a tablespoon. So I decided to make a mixed spice mixture of nutmeg, ground ginger, mace, cloves, and allspice, and cinnamon, my 1 teaspoon of cinnamon. And, you know, the cake was even better. So I would say, and this gives you a little room for creativity, make your own little warm spice blend, adding up to about a tablespoon of spices. Mix that with the sugar and the nuts. That's your topping. Save it. The base of the cake is 3 eggs, and I've never done this with a whisk, but I'm sure you can. I usually do it with a hand mixer, but I'm into like doing everything with a whisk these days if I possibly can. So you whisk together the 3 eggs until they're nice and light, 3/4 of a cup of sugar, adding it gradually, and 1/3 of a cup of vegetable oil. Now, as I said, I like to use grapeseed oil, especially this time of the year. If you have one of these, you know, if you have fancy walnut oil, this is the time to use it. I never have it, but it does go rancid very quickly. So if you have some and it's open, you better use it. So beat that in slowly. Now you have eggs, sugar, vegetable oil, and then beat in 3/4 of a cup of matzah cake meal. Spread this in an 8-inch square, very well greased. I have a new oil jar that sprays. I like it. I don't like to use those commercial oven sprays, but you can just brush an 8-inch square pan with some oil, and then pour in your batter, half the batter, and then you're going to top half the batter with half your sliced apples. You will have peeled, cored, and sliced 4 or 5 apples, depending on the size, in 1/4-inch slices. If you want to figure it out by cups, it usually turns out to be about 5 cups of apples. I like Golden Delicious for this. If you can get Mutsu, that they're great. Jana Gold is good. If you like raisins, you can put in as much as 1/3 a cup of raisins. So put in half your apples on top of the batter, scatter some raisins if you want, then put in more batter and more apples, and finally your sugary walnut topping. Bake this at 350 for, it's going to take a good hour and 15 minutes, until you're going to see the batter, the cake batter will separate from the side of the pan slightly, and then you'll know it's done. Because a cake tester doesn't work with this. Now, here's the deal. This cake is best the day after. I would let it cool in the pan. You don't have to take it out of the pan. It's one of those very homey things. You just cut it out of the pan and serve it on a plate if you want to put some garnish. If you're eating a traditional Passover meal, you probably did not have dairy, which means that you're not supposed to eat dairy for dessert. But if you're eating this just for its own sake, like in the middle of the week at coffee time in the afternoon, you're welcome to put whipped cream or vanilla ice cream on top. But what happens is if you let it sit overnight, after it's fully cooled down, cover it with plastic. This is one of the few times I'll recommend putting plastic over a baked good. But in this cake, the moisture makes the top, that sugary walnut top, a caramelly quality to it, and I think it makes the cake even better. It gets cut into squares. whereas an 8-inch pan should feed at least 6, if not 8 people. It's pretty, you know, it's a rich dessert. This is not my grandmother's Passover. My grandmother made for Passover her famous walnut cake, which I made for many years until I realized that Passover desserts had become so glamorous. My grandmother's homey walnut cake was not passing muster, and in fact, nobody was eating it. And my sister said, "Oh, well, I love it for breakfast." Did she offer me to take home some for breakfast? No. So that was the last year I made it. You know, after eating the chocolate and whatever other desserts that didn't exist when I was a boy, she said, "I liked it for breakfast." Well, I do like it. It's a very good cake for breakfast. It's really just a souffle of walnuts, if you think about it. It doesn't have any starch in it at all. It's just a lot of eggs. The whole thing is risen by eggs. And it's a true torch.
Quick question?
Yes.
When you have to do the Seder on Saturday, when and you're Orthodox, when is your major preparation?
That's a very good question. I'll have to ask my neighbor downstairs, who she will tell you doesn't have to do this anymore because she now goes to her daughter. That happens. But I don't. I truthfully don't know. I guess you can't. You can't. You have to be finished on Friday night. I don't know. You eat. I get. You know, people who are that observant have. Ovens that go by the clock, you know, they get turned
right.
on, they turn off. You know, they do a lot of automatic things because you're not allowed to do that if it's the Sabbath.
Right.
But when it's the Sabbath and you're supposed to be preparing for a Seder, it's a good question. Don't know the answer. Anyway, I mean, really, by the way, I thought about this morning. If you're very, very observant, meaning chassid or black hatter, severely Orthodox, you don't eat anything with moistened matzah until the last 2 days of Passover. It's an 8-day holiday. Because it, God forbid, literally, a fermentation should start, then it's no longer suitable for Passover. So if you add moisture to this, to matzah, in theory, you know, after a very short time, an imperceptible fermentation starts. So you're not allowed, and I think it's all about being practical. The last couple of days of Passover, if you're super duper Orthodox, you can moisten the matzah, and I'm thinking it's because you don't want to waste it. You don't want it to be left over, so to speak, after the not required to eat it. I don't find eating matzah a hardship, by the way. I sort of like matzah. But I do get very, here in Brooklyn, handmade shmura matzah, which I think is another level of gastronomy. Anyway, so those dishes that we associate with with Passover, like matzah brei, which is moistened matzah cooked with eggs, pancake style or scrambled, depends on your family. Matzah balls, technically, are not really kosher for Passover until the last 2 days of Passover, when you use up that extra matzah meal. Any of the baked goods that I make.
Okay, folks, we need to wrap this up, please.
Any of the baked goods I make, you know, are forbidden. And I should ask one of my super-duper Orthodox friends what they eat for dessert. I think my grandmother made fruit poached pears and fruit compote. Anyway, this holiday for me is just full of nostalgia. So I guess I could go on and on, but I won't. So we have Passover week leading up to Easter, which has its own set of fabulous foods. Next week it's Easter.
And we will wait with bated breath, if not with hunger. So we thank you, as ever, Mr. Foodman.
Well, everybody have a very very productive week, and follow the Neapolitan advice. It doesn't matter who's running the government as long as we get lunch.
Thank you very much, Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.